Welcome to Motherhood in Hollywood, episode 119. My very special guest today is none other than my husband, Chris. Yay! I'm very excited that he is joining me on the podcast because we are going to be talking about some things that are happening in the world today, some of the events that happened in Las Vegas, and just a little heartfelt talk between an old married couple. I hope you guys enjoy it.
Grab your popcorn and goobers. It's time for Motherhood in Hollywood with your host, Heather Brooker. This is a crude prude's perspective on being a full-time mom in showbiz. She's not a perfect mom, but she can play one on TV. Hold on to your butts. Here's Heather.
Hey, friends. Welcome to a very special episode of Motherhood in Hollywood. My guest today is Chris Brooker. Do you remember back in the 80s when they would say, and now, a very special episode of Blossom.
Different Strokes or something, yeah.
Yeah, it would be something like that. And now, a very special episode.
There was always a lesson to be learned.
Of Dynasty. I miss shows like Dynasty and Dallas.
They're bringing Dynasty back.
Yeah, but it's different. I want them, don't bring it back.
They can never do those shows again.
No.
I mean, I really don't think they can.
It was a moment in time.
Yep.
Like, remember, they tried to redo Dallas, and didn't it tank?
I think it lasted a season.
Yeah.
Maybe two seasons.
Yeah.
But, I mean, they even had some of the originals. You know, JR.
Larry Hagman.
Patrick Duffy was in it, and everything else.
Yeah, P. Duff.
It's not P. Duff.
I don't think he would mind.
He never went by P. Duff.
I don't think he would mind if the kids call him P. Duff. Although I'm not really a kid, I guess.
Yeah.
But anyway, I hate that they keep doing that. And I saw there's some article I posted the other day on the Motherhood in Hollywood Facebook page. Follow me. About all of these shows. There was a list of like 10 or 15 projects that were movies from our childhood and our youth, essentially.
Movies or shows?
Movies. Or maybe it was shows. Shit, I don't remember what I posted. But anyway, it was stuff that we grew up on that have special place in my heart.
Greatest American Hero is coming
back. That
they're
redoing.
All kinds of stuff.
Yeah. Why?
There's no more originality.
Do you think that's it? I feel like I
know.
That's
laziness. It's laziness.
I feel like I know writers, especially since starting Motherhood in Hollywood. I know writers now. I've met producers. I've met people who are creating original ideas that are being made. Not being made. So why go back into the vault? Like I just wrote a story the other day about how Men in Black is being rebooted, but not the main story itself. They're expanding the universe.
And there was talk about doing a crossover with 21 Jump Street.
Right, because it's the same producer or something.
Or something like that, yeah.
Why?
It's money. It's instant familiarity, instant audience. People are going to go see it.
But
they will.
Is it like I didn't?
It's not a great idea by any means, but
people will
see it.
I guess I just don't have that level of fandom, and this is something I've been thinking about lately. Is the level that fans have a love that they have for their favorite actor, for their favorite singer?
Yeah, we talked about this the other day. Actually, yeah.
For fandom, there's never been anything that or anyone that I'm so in love with or enamored or like a fan of that I would like. Cry if I met them or pass out or like camp out overnight to get tickets to their show. There's no one I can think of that I feel that way about. And maybe I'm just because I'm a cold-hearted bitch. I don't know.
Well, no, this is in the wake of, you know, the passing of Tom Petty and, you know, a lot of people. There's an outpouring and there's some great videos online, actually, of like entire baseball stadiums, you know, singing Tom Petty songs.
Right.
You know, in his...
That conversation was rooted in the passing of Tom Petty, and I know, and people are probably going to stone me on the internet, but you know, feel free. I'm not a huge Tom Petty fan. I appreciate his place in music, but maybe I don't appreciate it enough because I was like, oh, that's sad. But I mean, I was not moved to tears. I'm like, you know, people are, I mean, there's like songs dedicated to him on Saturday Night Live and like all of these. People are coming forward like he's an icon, and maybe he is, but he was never an icon to me.
Who is an icon to you?
Well, you mean like if some, like a living or dead?
Well, living. Let's call it living for right now.
Madonna, I think, is still pretty much.
But you wouldn't be moved to tears.
I don't think so.
Right, right. Well, I mean, that's just.
I mean, I would be very sad.
I'm the same way. You know, I'm a huge music fan. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of artists have influenced my life over the years, but none I can think of that I would break down and cry and, you right. know, be overly maudlin about, you know?
Maybe we're just me. Like, we have no heart.
Terrible people. We are awful.
That's not true. I try to think that there really isn't very much that does make me cry. Channing makes me cry. Like, on a daily basis. Hashtag parenting.
Did you introduce me?
I did. I said, Chris Brooker's here. Okay. And then I also did a little thing before you came in the room that said, my husband is
Chris Brooker's here. I missed that one.
Yes. You
were. Hi, everybody.
It was before you were here. But they know you by now. You've been on enough shows. You're my main repeat guest.
Sure.
But I was trying to think about who I would be completely like moved to tears if they passed away. And I just can't think of anybody. There's nobody that I'm like, oh my gosh, this person changed my life. Like, that I don't know. Obviously, people right. I know in person. But there's no one that I'm like a fan of that I would be like, oh my God.
Yeah, I can't think of anyone either, really. I mean, I'd be sad. It'd be a bummer.
I think I'll be sad when John Bon Jovi dies.
Okay.
Because for me, he was... Don't laugh.
Sure.
Don't laugh. For me, he represents a moment in time in my youth where I was like so crazy about John Bon Jovi. Like, I think maybe John Bon Jovi or Axl Rose. Like, yeah. I'm kind of a rocker chick.
If Axl Rose had died in like 1992, yeah, I'd be a bit more sad about it.
Would you? What a terrible thing to say.
Well, I mean, I don't know.
Oh my God, this has taken a horrible turn. This podcast is already
just kind of a puffy guy
in the crapper. Oh God, leave him alone. Although I still look like him. It's funny.
Yeah,
in,
you do.
In
actually.
High school, yeah. I looked like him because we were both skinny and had long red hair. And now we're both fat and puffy and have long red hair. So Axel, I'm basically your long lost sister. So messed up. I'm sure he's listening. What was I going to say? Oh, so it has been, speaking of like some sadness and crying lots of tears, we're going to get serious for a second. It's been a really hard week in the United States of America because of the events that happened last Sunday night in Las Vegas. And I, for those of you who don't know, I'm a news writer and producer. So I actually was at work when this story was breaking and was, you know, one of the first news stations to hear about it because one of our employees had a friend who was at the concert and she was texting him saying, there's an active shooter at this concert I'm at. Or what's going on? Do you know anything? So he came in and told us, and then we started getting all of these news alerts just a few minutes after it all had happened.
Oh, I didn't know that. I didn't know that. Wow. Mm-hmm.
So we knew about it, and our executive producer was like, okay, well, let's try to figure out what's going on. Of course, you know, we're trying to call to get verification, but they're busy trying to stop the shooter, and it was like we didn't know to the extent that it was going on. I mean, things like that happen in the newsroom. You'll get a call or a tip or something, and you call and check it out, and it turns out to be nothing. But unfortunately, this was something that was horrific. And, you know, I was at work until 2 a.m. covering it, writing stories, editing video, and seeing the video as it's coming into the newsroom of, you know, the stuff people had shot with their cell phones.
Yeah. Well, and you saw the unedited, like unaired video and stuff like that. Wow.
Well, we saw a lot of it was what people were posting on social media. And it's so funny to me that that is how we now get our information out. It was mostly Twitter. Yeah. Honestly, people say all the time, oh, Twitter is dead. You know, Trump is killing Twitter or whatever with his stupid tweets. But it is still, without a doubt, the most immediate way, I think, to
That's
get information.
Where I get my news on a daily basis.
Yeah.
I go out to Twitter.
And I think
click links.
If there's something like a topic I want to research or see if it's trending or whatever, I'll go to Twitter and I'll search the hashtag and see if anybody's talking about it. Yeah. So essentially, that's what happened was people started hashtagging Las Vegas shooting and you know, that sort of thing. And we started seeing all these videos come in and we were grabbing it and turning it around and putting it on the air. And then the network took over and started doing coverage. And so it was just a very crazy, surreal night. And maybe the reason I don't cry, and maybe this is just something I'm thinking about, maybe the reason I don't cry over fans or passing or any celebrities like that is because I've worked in news so long that I've seen so many people die. I have been on crime scenes where there have been dead people.
Covered stories personally up close.
Yes. I have written stories about every famous person you could think of passing away. So maybe there's a little bit of that journalistic buffer that I still have where I'm like, sure. I can appreciate someone from a distance, but still remain kind of not cry or not get swept up on it.
It's a bit different for me. I haven't been able to take my eyes off the news all week. I work a desk job, and a lot of that job entails me just basically surfing the internet all day. Mm-hmm. And so I'm literally going back and forth between different news sites, and I'm, you know, finding things of interest. And, you know, this topic has been just in the forefront all mm-hmm. week. I can't get away from it. And so I come home at night, and I'm watching it. I find it fascinating. I don't necessarily want to watch it, but I feel like I need to.
I think we are as a culture fascinated by the story unfolding because we're more dumbfounded. Like, how could somebody do something like this?
Well, and all the ramifications of it.
How did he get access to all these guns right. and all this ammo? Like, it's just sort of mind-boggling that one single person. You know, we're all, or not everybody, but so many people are so worried about another terrorist attack. Like, where are the terrorists coming from? And this was not a terrorist. This was, well, I mean, not in the stereotypical sense that people think of a terrorist, but he certainly was a terrorist. But he just was this old retired man.
What's fascinating about it is even the police and all the authorities are saying, you know, this is one of those events that you can't prepare for.
Right.
I mean, there's no drill that they can prepare to stop this kind of thing. It was a...
Because there was no warning signs. He wasn't, at least not that anyone had noticed, mentally unbalanced. He had never been any red flags, with law or...
He was a high roller at the casinos.
Right. He was a millionaire. I think his brother said he had millions of dollars because he sold a business.
He was kind of a weird guy. You know, the history... I mean, as they're digging into his history, he was kind of weird. There was a deposition like back in 2013, you know, that he gave some, he was on a deposition and, he was kind of a weird guy, said he spent all of his nights in the casinos, gambled a lot of money.
What was he on a deposition for? Like was he being sued?
It was a slip and fall. He tried to sue a casino for a slip and fall.
Oh, was it the Bay?
No, I don't think it was the Bay. I think it was something else.
What is the full name of the
Mandalay Bay?
Mandalay Bay.
Yeah, Mandalay Bay.
I had a moment where I forgot what I was.
I think it was something else. But like back in 2013, he tried to have a slip and fall suit against a casino, and it, you know, went to court. There was a deposition. They interviewed him, and now they're releasing the excerpts of that interview.
Oh, interesting.
And he was kind of a weird guy, mm-hmm. you know, kind of a loner, kind of, you know, a night owl, stayed up all night gambling thousands and thousands of dollars.
Crazy.
Kind of weird.
Yeah.
Kind of weird, but still not enough to throw up any giant red flags.
Yeah. See, whereas you've been sort of like watching everything, I've kind of like tried to shy away from it because I don't like put my head in the sand. I mean, but I guess maybe I do a little bit, but it keeps me up at night and it wears on my soul in that way because I think, oh my God, we can never go to a concert again. We can never go out in public. I already am terrified of like a car accident or some freak train, you know, car flying on top of my car or something, just because I have covered so many bizarre car accidents and horrible things, shootings. And, you know, some guy got chopped up with a machete the other night at a 7-Eleven in West Hollywood. The guy was just going to a 7-Eleven, you know, and he got chopped in the head with a machete. So it's just like things like that and stories like that that I cover and I write. It makes me very nervous all the time, and I'm constantly worried there's something coming.
Well, it's self-preservation for you then to kind of stay away from it a little bit.
Yeah, but
it, you know,
yeah,
it eases the soul.
Yeah, that's a true. Bit. That's true. But I know that the final count was 58 people killed, 59, including the shooter. And I just read CNN, like just before we started our podcast, CNN came out and said that apparently he killed a security guard.
Right.
just a few minutes before his shooting spree.
Yeah, the security guard was investigating like a door alarm or something like that mm-hmm. the shooter had set off, or smoke alarm that the shooter had set off, and he shot him, and then...
Yeah, he wasn't killed, though, it looks like.
No, injured.
Yeah, the security guard told police he had been shot and gave them the location of Paddock's room. Anyway...
So, I mean, in that security guard, God bless him, is a hero.
Yeah, at least he well, thankfully he didn't die, but at least he was able to lead other officers to where exactly. he was. Where the shooter was. I just think, you know, this is the world we're living in now.
It's a scary place.
And this is the world that our daughter is going to grow up in. And that's the part I think that does make me choke up and that does scare me, is because she's so innocent and so little and so protected right now. And mm-hmm. there's going to come a time where we're going to have to talk to her about shooters and gunmen. And what a horrible conversation to have with your child.
I was thinking about this the other day that, you know, when we were growing up in Oklahoma, we had tornado drills.
Right.
You know, now our kid is growing up in a world where they have shooting drills,
mm-hmm.
where they have active shooter drills, duck and cover drills for...
And earthquake drills.
And earthquake drills, yeah. But the shooter drills are really what gets me. I've read about these that now schools are implementing... Mm-hmm. What would happen in case there was a shooter walking down the hallway? What do you do? Well, you know,
and a lot of that is because of Sandy Hook, of what happened in Sandy Hook. Which
of course,
that to me, that
Columbine,
one...
Columbine, you know, actually was the kind of forefather of all this. I mean, if you want, but yes, Sandy Hook.
No, Sandy Hook is the one for me that gets me choked up. Like that really just breaks my all I can think of is that they were, you know, just a little bit older than Channing, and all those little babies just in the room by themselves. That, you know, you send your kids off to school and you think they're safe, and that they're going to be, you know, just learning their reading and writing and playing and having fun, and then somebody walks in and starts shooting the place up. Like those parents, I just cannot imagine the pain that they must be going through. That's the stuff that keeps me up at night, and that's the stuff that breaks my heart. And so I feel every time we have one of these shootings, it's like another reminder that we need to do something. And every time it happens, people always point to other countries as an example.
Sure.
Like, look at Australia. They don't have guns and they don't have shootings. Look at Canada. They don't have very many guns and they never have shootings, you know. You see the pie charts and the graphs that show all the guns in America, you know. I think I heard
it's
on NPR the other
search,
day that said like 3% of the gun owners own 30% of the guns or something like that. I'm probably quoting it wrong. But anyway, it's like a small percentage of people own 70% of the guns in the country.
Right.
And I know a lot of them are, you know, legal gun owners and all of that. But it's like, why do you legally need why do you need this gun for hunting? You know, I mean,
I don't necessarily have a problem with the legality of guns. I understand if you want a gun for home defense, fine. If you're a hunter, okay. You don't need, there's never a need for a semi-automatic rifle.
There's never
a need for a machine gun.
I beg to differ. I don't even think you need a gun for home defense. We don't live in the Wild West anymore. We're not fighting for our property. We're not fighting for, you know,
but
our safety on a daily basis.
But that is the American way. There is such an ideal with so many Americans. And I'm not for this ideal by any means. I'm just saying it exists.
Right.
That it's a romanticized view of America. It's like, guns. I got to protect my land. I got to protect my people. Wild, wild west. It's the diehard syndrome. You know, everything will be okay if I just had a gun.
Yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker.
Exactly. Yeah, right. And,
I see it. I mean, we live in Los Angeles, one of the most dangerous cities. Like, there's a lot of crime here, faux show. You guys don't even know the half of the crime because we don't even have time to report on it all. There's so much. But I don't necessarily feel like I need a gun, though. I never have felt like I needed a gun.
I never have either.
I mean, there's been times where I wanted to hit people with my car. Or I want to give someone just a little ram with my car.
Well, to be fair, a single person, not a crowd of people.
No, no, no. Right, like, right. Just some jerk who's just some driving like an a-hole on the 5 freeway or something. Just bump them a little bit with my car.
There is an issue, you know, and we were kind of talking about this the other day, that, you know, Sandy Hook happened in 2012. Mm-hmm. Since then, there's been 1,500 mass shootings in America. Mm-hmm. Over 1,500, actually. And a mass shooting consists of, was it 4 or over?
Four or more people.
Not including the shooter or
right.
something
four
like
or
that.
More people killed.
You know, a definition of a mass shooting with, I think the number is 1,700 people killed, over 6,000 people wounded. So in 5 years, those statistics are just growing. You can Google this. You can put it up on a map anywhere, and just the staggering amount of like red dots all over the United States. Just
happened.
Google
yeah.
shooting since Sandy Hook. It's the whole map is covered. And
I think that the NRA is so powerful that people don't even know. The average person, I don't think, knows just how far reaching the NRA is.
It's deep pockets.
Into every congressman, every senator, every, I don't want to say every, because I'm sure not every one of them takes money from the NRA, but lobbyists are very powerful.
Yeah.
You've got lobbyists for the cigarette industry. You've got lobby for fire and, well, I guess fire and tobacco is probably the same. But, the food and beverage industry is also a huge lobbying factor. And I remember, I vaguely remember in high school, like civics class, like learning one little section about lobbyists. And I feel like that was glossed over a little bit because they are actually way more powerful than our actual legislators.
Right.
Because they are buying people.
They buy the laws.
They buy the laws, or they buy you to not make laws. So it's on one hand, very, I don't know if it's unique to America necessarily. I can't imagine that it is, that we're the only country that has lobbyists. But it is an interesting part of our government and how our government is run. But I think it is also destroying our country because greed and power and business are overtaking the welfare and well-being of the American people.
And they're doing it, they say, for the sake of the American people. And that's what kills me.
Well, I don't think lobbyists say that.
I think the NRA says that. I think the politicians say that. You know, we are siding with the NRA because they don't want to allow bump stocks because that's what's right. In reality, the NRA donated $1 million to their campaign.
Well, my favorite article to come out was the actual, because I'm always curious, like, okay, so who are the senators and congressmen? Who are these people who are not supporting stricter gun legislation?
Yeah.
And so the most interesting articles to me are when journalists go through and they pinpoint this senator got X amount from the NRA.
Oh, yeah.
This congressman got X amount from the NRA, and so on. I want to know, like, how much are they being paid to sacrifice our safety?
That information is also very ready on Twitter.
Yeah.
Like, if I see that stat, all those stats come through on Twitter all the time. You know, some...
You got to be careful, though. It's not fake news, because there's a lot
of
the crazy websites out there that are now, like, so prolific and just spreading disinformation.
There are a lot of very liberal people.
Right.
Actors. Ugh. Gross. tweeting out bad
Where
stuff.
Where are you going with this?
No, I'm just joking.
I know, I'm
like, just joking.
Rephrase that shit, buddy.
No, but I've actually seen a lot of those very stats on Twitter. Of this senator accepted $400,000 for their campaign
right.
from the NRA. This senator...
And
some,
by that
cetera,
same token, I would like to know... Who are the senators and congressmen and representatives, whatever, who are supporting Trump? Who are they? Who are the ones that are backing off and looking for ways to distance themselves from him and his agenda and fight him in every step of the way? Like, I want to see that article.
It's tough, right? Because
put your face in the mic, please.
Oh, sorry. It's tough because Corker just came out today and basically said the Emperor has no clothes, mm-hmm. and, you know, called him out, basically. But Corker isn't coming up for re-election. So it all, because then it devolves in this whole political thing.
Right.
And
all that stuff he did in Puerto Rico, my God.
Throwing paper towels,
like saying, you did good by only having 16 people die, unlike Katrina, where thousands died. Like, that was a huge mistake, but not you guys. You guys are doing good. Thanks, Puerto Rico. Like, are you kidding
me? Right.
I just die of embarrassment that, you know, and I'm sure there's some people who listen to my podcast who I never get political on here. So this is kind of a one-off. But I don't know. Sometimes I get political, maybe. But anyway, there may be some people listening who are Trump supporters, and my goal is not to offend. I hope you haven't already turned off. But if you have, come back. But my, I'm at the point now where even I, who try to remain as a journalist very impartial as I can, and I definitely do when I'm writing and when I'm at work, I make sure that I share both sides if there's, you know, any issue like that. But as a person, I find it incredibly hard to sit by and watch this continue to devolve into our country, because I have actually had the thought, and we've had this conversation, where can we move?
Right.
If we need to leave this country because it's falling apart with mass shootings, a megalomaniac president, earthquakes and fires, like half of California is on fire right
now. That's crazy right now.
Where can we move where we'll be safe and still speak English? Because we're too old to learn another language.
I don't want
to
learn anything
new. I legitimately have actually looked online, and I know that this has been a popular search because Google knew exactly what I meant was, where can Americans move? Like, yeah. Where can I go as an American? I would love to move to England, but England seems to be having a little bit of its own problem with terrorists.
It's not that easy to move just to England either, I understand.
I feel like they would take me, though. I'm part English. Look at me. English-Irish?
Yeah, okay.
See?
Yeah, I'm sure.
I feel like they'd be like, come on in, Heather. We missed you.
Welcome aboard.
Make tea?
No, the world's in a weird place right now. It's scary. It's a very scary place right now.
That being said, I think that we need to go somewhere that will totally lift our spirits.
Okay, Hawaii.
Disneyland.
Nice segue.
Yeah. I think we need to go to D-Land.
Done.
Wait, Disneyland, I should probably clarify.
Oh, yeah.
Dirty. Only on this podcast can we go from a horrible mass tragedy to me making a D-Land joke. Classy Heather Brooker. But anyway, so we're actually going to go to Disneyland tomorrow for the Mickey's Halloween Adventure.
So much fun.
And we've been planning this for a couple of months, and now Anaheim is on fire.
Seriously, it's like...
We're watching the news, and I was like, what the fuck is going on? All of Anaheim right now is on fire and surrounded by flames, and people at Disneyland are taking pictures of the horrible smoke that's filling the air.
And the ash raining down
on Disneyland. And I'm like, yay, can't wait to go and take our daughter and walk around all day and night and that. But we've been planning it. We have a hotel room. We're going to stay overnight.
Because trick-or-treat. It's going to be
because the trick-or-treating event is at night, and we have costumes, so...
It'll be fun. It'll be a blast.
Yeah. I mean, I don't mean to sound ungrateful. I realize there are much worse things happening in the world. I get that. We've just talked about them. However, I just want there to not be rainy ash on us at Disneyland. The happiest place on earth.
Exactly.
Is that too much to ask, Satan? Are you listening, devil?
It'll be a blast.
Do you think the devil listens to my podcast?
If anyone would, possibly, yes.
That's horrible. All right, I'm going to stop before we start getting too weird and blasphemous. Thank you, as always, for coming on and sharing your amazing gift with me.
Thank you for having me. What gift is that? D-Land?
Speech. Your D-Land gift. Oh, my God. Your beautiful voice.
Ah, yes.
And your smart thoughts.
Thank you.
Love you.
Love you.
Thanks so much for listening, everybody. Do not forget to follow me over on the Instagram and Facebook at Motherhood in Hollywood and at Heather Brooker on Twitter. And make sure you subscribe to my podcast and leave a review, would ya? Thank you. Have a wonderful week, you guys. And remember, I'm not a perfect mom, but I can play one on TV. Bye. Balls.